KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This program was brought to you by Jim and Shirley Brown's Apartments, located in Sandpoint above Trident Seafoods and the Boat Harbor, featuring two-bedroom apartments on a month-to-month basis. For more information, call Jim Brown at 386-6050.
Another shot, she'll love me again.
Run that back, Turbo.
Make it a double.
Whiskey, whiskey, won't you go away? Come again some other day. Cause a memory came out to play. And I'm tired of it, tired of it. I don't wanna wonder where she been.
Where she at?
She was here and now she gone again.
Get her back.
Now it's me and all my whiskey friends. And I'm tired of it,
hey.
Tired of it.
Yeah, it's me. Dark brown skin, call eye contact while walking in. Perfect timing, get beside me, now we locking in. She like, tell me how you want it, on the rocks again.
Little
salt around the rim,
okay.
Feel to the top again.
Let go.
Fell back, now I'm back in it. Deal shots got me sending. Big rapper DJ skinning, playing Richard Miller square business.
Boss.
See me in the club, two-stepping, diamonds around my neck, square dancing. You done made a gangster romantic, fiending for your love, I'm an addict.
Hey.
So addicted, ain't no we can do about it.
Nah.
Country motherfucker, I say what's up, she say howdy.
Howdy.
Call you my little cowgirl, how you? Like a stallion, don't know why I love it, can't get tired of it.
I'm on you bad.
Whiskey, whiskey, won't you go away? Come again some other day. Cause a memory came out to play. And I'm tired of it, tired of it. I don't wanna wonder where she been.
Where she at?
She was here and now she gone again.
Get her back.
Now it's me and all my whiskey friends. And I'm tired of it. Shelf, I swear I'm through with you. You so hard to leave it alone. It's always something new with you. Ain't nowhere to get her gone, gone, gone. So I guess I'm gonna tie one on. She's so cold I had to go and pour you over ice. Way he got me locked down, you think whiskey was my wife. You so good I had to take you home and hit it twice. Two of you gon' keep me up all night. Whiskey, whiskey, won't you go away? Come again some other day. Cause a memory came out to play. And I'm tired of it, tired of it. I don't wanna wonder where she been.
Where she at?
She was here and now she gone again.
Need her back.
Now it's me and all my whiskey friends. And I'm tired of it, tired of it.
When I die, I want to come back as a country boy. No, there ain't no better life if you ask me. If my neck don't come out red, then Lord, just keep me dead. Cause a country boy's all that I know how to be. Always breaking, my dogs are always barking, my money has trouble making, and my truck has trouble starting. I'm up before the sun, either hauling hay or hunting. My work ain't ever done, but son, I wouldn't trade it for nothing. So when I die, I wanna come back as a country boy. Country boy's all that I know how to be. Yeah, if y'all ain't in the draw and a fish ain't on my wall and the whiskey don't burn going down, my feet ain't in a holler and blue and
the country boy's all that I know how to be. When I die, I want to come back as a country boy, live on this land.
Man, I'm ready when y'all are.
This is your song, Mike. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, and. So take me down the road that's a little bit windy to a place they still put sugar in their iced tea, where the women all fine and the love is fair. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere.
Hey, driver, pull on over. I'm in a fight with God. This Carolina shoulder seems the place I'm getting off. Daddy always told me never make a home on the road while your lady's sneaking out and the kids are growing old.
Hey, driver, I've been riding
this lonely way too long. All the love I had worth giving was all spent on my songs.
Hey, driver, the boys are gambling
with more than just their cars, with their bottles and their drugs and their Bibles in their hearts.
So take me down a road that's a little bit windy to a place they still put sugar in their iced tea, where the women are fine and the love is fair. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere.
Hey, driver, I've been feeling like there's no point at all. The Kleiner pen ain't kicked in and I missed my sister's call. Hey, driver, I'm so tired of the ways of this whole world. Just drive until the tires melt. We'll come back when it's clear.
Send me down a road that's a little bit windy to a place they still put sugar in their iced tea, where the women are fine and the love is fair. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere.
Michael Trotter,
yeah. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere.
Take me down a road that's a little bit windy
to a place they still put sugar in their iced tea, where the women are fine and the love is fair. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere. Yeah, driver, you can drive me off anywhere.
Hey, driver, you can drop me off anywhere. Hey, driver, you can drop me off anywhere.
I see you calling. I didn't want to leave you like that. It's 5 in the morning, yeah, yeah. 100 on the dash, 'cause my wheels are rolling. Ain't taking my foot off the gas. And it only took me one night to see the end in the line. Stepping deep in your eyes.
Yunga Tribal Council is a proud sponsor of KSDP and Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting. Thank you for your support.
KSDP, 830 AM, Sandpoint, Alaska, K20 1DA, 88.1 FM, King Cove.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, Inn Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
I'm a paleo nerd, don't you understand? I'm a paleo nerd.
Hey, Ray!
Hello, David.
How are you?
Dude, I'm good. I've relocated.
I know. The background is not the usual little cubbyhole in Ketchikan, Alaska. You are in probably the exact geographical center of the contiguous United States.
Yes, I have returned to the heartland. I'm here in the prairies, man. I'm in Kansas. I've gone back to Kansas.
But it really is almost the exact geographical center when you look at it.
Yeah, actually, we're close to the... There is a plaque at the very center of the continental United States.
And like, if you stand on one side, the country kind of shifts, right?
Yeah, well, especially since I've been eating so many burgers here. But yeah, it'll shift. But yeah, no, I'm in the flatlands. I came back to Kansas. I went to junior high and high school and college.
Oh, that's right. Here. This is really homecoming as well. But what are you doing? No, it can't be business or art related, can it?
Well, but of course it is. I went to art college here, and I'm in Lindsborg, Kansas, Little Sweden, USA. I went to a college here called Bethany College, a little Lutheran school. And this town was founded in the late 1800s, 1880s, and I got my degree back in the 1970s, 1977. I lived in this little town from 74 to 77.
Wait, did you get a degree in philosophy and then never used it?
Well, I actually did use my degree, Dave. It's an art degree. I got a studio arts degree here, a Bachelor of Arts. Yes, sir.
You could draw on all that?
Yeah, man. I learned to whittle, and I learned to do prints, and I learned a lot here in this little town. It's a cool little art town, and it's a beautiful little town.
And a main street?
Main
street. With a, is there like a soda fountain, you know, on the corner?
Literally, dude, it's like that. I am living on Main Street, but I'm also living in an old artist's house. This guy was a mentor to me back in the day, Lester Raymer.
And tell me about your show that is up at a place called the Little Red Barn.
Well, it's at the Red Barn Studio and Museum. It's Lester Raymer. Lester Raymer was an oil painter and printmaker, a man of many talents, and he died in 1990-ish or so. I should know that, but an old-time artist, but he was a working artist, and he built this beautiful studio, and when he and his wife Ramona did not have kids, but they left it as kind of a museum, you know, to his work, but also he built a studio that he wanted artists to work in, and you apply, and that's where I'm at right now. And Lester...
Oh, that's right. You're an artist in residence.
I am, yes.
What does that mean, though, exactly?
Well, artist in residence means you have an artist that lives in a place, and we artist types, you know, like to move around a little bit, and we're just living here in the land of sunshine.
So if I, like, show up at 9 a.m. to the studio, you'd come out holding a cup of coffee in your pajamas because you, like, slept there?
Well, I'm in the house next door to the studio. I learned that trick, you know, you don't live with your work. So actually, we're in Lester's house, and he actually was one of the guys who taught me this, like, you know, and have your work, like, nearby, but leave it behind you. So anyway, so I did the same thing. And, you know, Lester, when I went to visit him when I was a student here, and I asked him, Lester, what is the secret to being a working artist? How do I do it? You know what Lester told me?
Treat it like a regular job.
Well, he did say treat it like a regular job, but he said stay in one place.
Oh. You mean like Michelangelo? He goes from Carrara and then to Rome and then to Florence and then back to Rome and then to Carrara? You mean like that?
No. Stay in one place. Lester basically landed in Lindsborg, and he stayed here, and he started a relationship with this community, and then all throughout the Midwest, he painted thousands of paintings, and collectors up and through Oklahoma and down in Texas and all the way up into Minnesota. So basically, I kind of followed his advice. I landed in Alaska, and I've been there for almost 40 years. So
I love that your work is Alaska influenced, and it's influenced by the surroundings of the nature, the incredible nature in Alaska. But how does staying in one place, is that a business suggestion or
I think it was kind of a business thing. I guess I was asking him sort of a business kind of question. You know, how right. do I really want to know how do you make a living as an artist?
And, oh, right, right.
And that is what he told me. And he was a working artist. He was not a teaching artist. He did not teach at the college. He worked. And I like to think that I'm a working artist, but what I did at that time too, Dave, is I had a 35mm film camera. I was 19 years old when I came to this town and to start my little college career. But I started photographing friends and colleagues and my professors and other artists in their studios. And I took some arty pictures too, you know, got all arty. But nice. I also, well, you know, it was art school, dude. But I did these portraits, and then over the years, I began to think, you know, I never really did anything with all these portraits that I took, and now they've kind of taken on some significance because that little era is kind of gone, but there's still an art scene here, but it was really strong and vibrant in the 70s, and I have a unique record of that. We wrote a grant, Marcia Howe and I worked and wrote a grant to the Kansas Arts Commission, and we got it funded, so it helped support this whole crazy thing I'm doing, but we printed up photos from back in my days here, calling it the Halcyon Days of the Borg, Lindsborg. And we had an opening on Friday night. My friend Chuck Bonner, the Fossil Hunter, came over.
Yep.
We played some music. My high school buddies showed up.
Wow.
And my college roommate from way back in the day, who's now a heart surgeon, made the trip from Wichita. I had some Ray Troll fans who literally flew in from Wichita in their Cessnas. There were two Cessnas that flew up to McPherson, and they came wearing the Ray Troll shirts, you know. And so it was cool.
Like I am wearing right now.
Like you are, and I'm not, because I take a break.
So this showing has no art, paintings. It's photographs only, right? It's
only photographs, yeah.
And this is the first time you've ever mounted a show of just photography?
Well, no, actually.
I thought you were going to say, yes, Dave, this is a first.
Well, kind of. It's a first for me to do this here in Kansas, but my Master of Fine Arts degree, I eventually went off to Seattle, and then I went to Washington State University, where I did dive deeper into photography.
Oh.
And I got really arty with my photography, but I was also doing printmaking and drawing, and I mixed it all up. So I would draw on my photographs, and I did these big diazo prints, and which are like blueprints in a way, and massive photographs that I drew and painted on. And but then when I moved to Alaska, I pretty much moved away from photography and drew and paint.
Your photography is awesome. I mean, the stuff you post on Instagram and Facebook is truly the subject matter, the filters and lenses you use. It's phenomenal.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks.
Like the one you did from just your recent trip of the fog coming over these weird islandscapes in the Gulf of Alaska. And the way that the iconic one is the ravens sitting on a pole. And you, oh, my goodness. It's, anyway, well done. Well done, Mr. Photographer, artist.
Well, thank you, sir. You know, it's not all about the, you know, I've often thought, if you want to dive deeper into the realm of photography and how it relates to art, I think the idea, I don't imagine I'm going to sell a lot of these photographs. So that was one thing. And the Lester Raymer advice is it's harder to sell photographs because, you know, I mean, frankly, everybody these days, really, with their iPhones, everybody can take a picture, right? But yeah. I think not everybody has that artistic eye. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got the lenses and filters and all that, but you have to take from the world what you think is significant, you know, that there's something about this image that resonates, maybe can resonate with people, that can evoke some sort of response.
Right.
Anyways, Dave, we've delved deep into that world. But actually, what's cool is I have this exhibit here at the Raymer Society's, the Red Barn Studio, but also at
It runs through?
Through October 15th, but simultaneously.
What year? 1990? Where are we? What year are we
in? We're in the year 2021, I think.
Right, right. But, so this will air while it's on.
Yeah. And it's also going to be at the San Zane Museum. What's cool about this town of Lindsborg?
Where's that?
In Lindsborg, there are 3,000 people, and there's like two art museums, soon to maybe be three art museums. And so the San Zane Museum is just up the street, further up Main Street and off to the side there. So
what is that name? San Zane? What is
San Zane. Name? Well, he was a Swedish painter.
Oh, okay.
Berger San Zane.
That's a cool name.
San Zane came here in like 1900. And began to paint landscapes, and he grew a huge audience too. And so then Lester came to town in the 1930s. So, and the Troll came to town in the 70s. So the scene is still continuing. It's a cool town, man. So
cool. Cool. So I had an amazing and crazy and anxiety weekend.
What? Weekend.
Anxiety filled weekend.
Uh-oh. I've not heard this. We haven't talked in a while.
No, we haven't talked in a week. So
did your neighbors finally get hip to what you're all about?
No. Well, I'll just say the earliest fossil finds attributable to this mammal, which is Animalia chordata, Mammalia carnivora, Mephitidae. Any idea what that is?
All right, so you just gave me the...
I'll continue.
So there was a varmint. There was a creature that you encountered.
There's a varmint. It's a varmint. And the original fossil finds were found in Nebraska dating back to the early Pleistocene.
So it's a badger. It's a less Wolverine.
Than 1.8 million years ago.
You got a Wolverine in your basement.
By the late Pleistocene, 70,000 to 14,500 years ago, and I'm reading this, obviously, this animal was widely distributed throughout the southern United States.
It's a weasel.
And it expanded northwards and westwards by the Holocene, which is 10,000 to 4,500 years ago.
It's...
All right. So I'm just going to now say this was a five-hour ordeal.
You battled with this creature.
The oily, yellow-colored musk consists of a mixture of powerful odorous thiols, which is a sulfur analogs of alcohol, in older sources called mercaptans, which can be sprayed at a distance of several meters. The odor of this musk was likened to a mixture of perfume. Listen to this. Perfume musk, essence of garlic, burning sulfur, and sewer gas magnified 1,000 times.
I've got it now. Yeah, it's on this. Related to, they're bears. They're related to bears. They're in the Carnivora. You were dealing with a skunk, man.
Mephitis Mephitis holzneri, which is a Southern California skunk.
Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, mon chéri.
Anyways, what happened?
Well, I have these little rats that are they're getting in my barbecue drippings, and they're leaving little rat poos everywhere, and they're going up my drain. We've hadn't had rain in a year, and they're living in my drain, and so I capture them in these little rat traps, and I release them across the river so they can't find across a different water source, right? And these rat traps are probably 12 inches by 5 inches by 5 inches. So they're small and narrow. And they go in, there's a little thing, they hit the button and the door comes down at the end. But it's a two-step door. You have to lift up the thing and then pull the door open. So it's a two-handed deal.
I think I see where this is going. Okay.
So Saturday morning, I wake up and I go outside and I look at this rat trap, and it is a solid square of black and white. I mean, that's how this skunk had gotten in there, and he filled up the entire square rectangle of this trap. I'm like, oh my God, a skunk. And I'm like, oh, so I've got to figure out how do I open this trap with two hands and not get sprayed. So I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm wearing shorts, I'm barefoot, and I have this fishing pole with a wire on the end, which I use to grab the bird feeders that are really high on the corner of my house, and that's how I get them up there and get them down. And on the end of this fishing pole, it's a broken fishing pole, there's a little wire that I've bent into an S shape. So I went, I'll use that. So I'm standing 6 feet away from this cage. I'm reaching out to undo it and spray right on my right leg. I'm like, no, I've been sprayed by a skunk. So I run to my hose and I spray that off. I'm like, I'm running out of breath, and I go and I said, okay, I'm going to try it again. And he sprays my left leg. I've got to run to the hose and do that again.
So he's aiming. Where is the little spray nozzle? Is it?
Oh, this is the crazy thing. It's right at the anus, and that little pink smile there. The accuracy was incredible. I could not believe it.
So he could aim it.
He could totally aim it, and he did it through the cage, through the little bars of this thing.
He's looking at you.
And not only did it spray me, but it sprayed behind me and all around me on my breakfast veranda.
So it's like a geyser?
Yeah, kind of like a squirt bottle with a straight spray with a little bit of side spray to it. It's pretty accurate. And they can go 3 meters. That's 15 feet.
Wow.
And they have 15 millimeters of the stuff in there.
Okay, so
the story's not over.
But what's it like being sprayed, though? I mean, what's it smell? Is it horrible?
It was a cool liquid, like someone just sneezed on you, kind of. So it wasn't like soaking. It was just, I felt the droplets.
But horrible smell? You like immediately were retching?
Well,
what?
And there was, I was already enveloped in the smell around because he had obviously sprayed when he got entombed in this cage. So I grab a huge piece of cardboard from a giant box that I had in my garage, and I use that as a shield. And I was able to manipulate this thing, and then I opened the door and held it open with my hand from 4 feet away, and he wouldn't leave.
Aw.
And so I had to get the hose and spray his butt to get him out. And he finally goes out and he hung around for 10 minutes and he wouldn't leave the area. And he finally did. I got some videos of him out the door there. But the bottom line is I had to go get this stuff and scrub my legs with a hard bristle brush of hydrogen peroxide and baking soda. I had to put bowls of vinegar around my house. I had to light incense.
Oh,
I had
man.
To scrub my walls outside and scrub the patio. It was a five-hour ordeal, and it still smells, and apparently it doesn't go away for 2 to 3 weeks.
So did you actually get him to leave? You like sprayed him with a hose or something? Just, you know, just hanging there?
No, he ended up walking away, and I caught him, that skunk, I'm sure it's the same one, in my squirrel trap, which I catch squirrels and release them as well. So he could even live on my property. I got some holes in the back that, you know, I don't know.
I thought you drove this skunk. Yeah, you mentioned in a previous episode you drove this skunk.
No, I let him go. I just let him go. I didn't drive him away. And my property backs up to hundreds of acres of wild land. So he could live out there with the bobcats and the mountain lions and the coyotes. And
what a strange thing to evolve. Deer. Just this horrible smelling, that's your defense, man. I've seen it work on me. If I haven't showered for a while, people will move away.
Yeah, I can second that motion. Yeah. But this smell is, it is definitely enduring. That was my crazy weekend. I want you to tell me about our guest today, who I had so much fun.
Oh yeah,
editing this, because I was not part of any of the questioning because I wasn't there. This was an interview you did at Kent Gibson's house. What do you call it?
His house.
His rockery? His house?
It is like a rockery. I was at Kent and Lucy's house when we recorded this, and it is pretty much like a rockery in a way.
It's in Oregon.
Well, they're in Newport, Oregon, and they live kind of in the countryside there. There's a lot of deer and stuff, and they come, you know, into their yard. They're off down a rock, little gravel road that you have to drive to, kind of hidden away. But, you know, Kent came into our lives as he walked into a lecture that Kirk and I were giving back many years ago, and Kent walked in with all these cool fossils, and he invited us out to his house then, and this was like in 2010 or 2012, I think, when we first met. But I have an exhibit in Newport, Oregon right now, and Kent has loaned a number of his fossils to the show, so we recorded it
cool.
there.
He's the harbor master of Newport,
yeah,
Oregon.
Yeah, he's the harbor master.
Yeah,
but
he regularly walks the beaches of the Oregon coastline and miraculously looks at these rocks and sees whale skulls and porpoise skulls. And I'm not going to give away the prize that you guys talk about in this episode, but it's amazing.
His
eyesight. He's a genius.
He's an amateur collector, and meaning that he'll tell the story in the interview,
yeah.
but he just
yeah.
gets into it, but he does the right thing. In
yeah.
that he searches for fossils, and when he finds a cool fossil, he does the right thing with the fossil. He's also
which
got
is what, Ray? What is the right
well,
thing?
Well, he turns it over to a public collection, and he works with scientists. So
you
public
notify
collection.
Your local
right.
museum or paleontologist.
And you've got to know the rules of collecting, and so he's got the permit to collect, too, along the Oregon coast there.
Right.
And so he does the right thing with it, but it's incredible the number of fossils he's found. And
yeah.
his garage is full of stuff. And he's yeah. got the ability to walk down. You and I would walk down the beach. We wouldn't see a thing. We'd have to look really, really hard. You know, I've been out fossil hunting a lot over the years. And there are certain people that have just got the gift. They are finders. And others of us are just searchers. Yeah. So Kent's got that ability with finding
right.
fossils. And they're usually in these nodules. And there's a little hint of brown. And he could spot that.
Well, I wasn't there, and I really enjoyed listening to this as a first-time listener while I edited it, and it was fun. And one thing I must say, the background sounds are truly delightful. And I won't give it away. It's just delightful.
We were sitting around outside and just put the iPhone down.
It's beautiful.
And we also were having beverages, so you could probably hear the clinking of the glasses.
Couldn't hear that. I know. I heard the clattering of rocks. And
I want to bring up something else, though, Dave.
Yeah.
But I've got something going on right now that's pretty cool, I realized.
Have you seen a doctor about that yet?
Something
going on?
Yes, I got something going on. But you know in baseball when you hit through the cycle? You know what that is?
No.
In one single...
Wait. Which shape ball is baseball?
All right, that's how much you know. All right. In baseball, when you hit through the cycle, in one game, you hit a single, you hit a double, a triple, and a home run. So you get all four. But now...
What if you walk a batter because you're a pitcher? Does that give you five?
Dave, come on, let me... All right, anyways, I have four exhibits right now. Simultaneously really? Running. I've really? Never done that before. Four exhibits.
So in museums.
Dave, I got four exhibits at once. It's really cool. No, I've got two here in Lindsborg, one at the Red Barn Studio and one at the Sanzay Museum. But I have Cruising the Fossil Coastline at the Oregon Coast Aquarium in Newport, Oregon. But right. I've also got another version of Cruising the Fossil Coastline at the Burke Museum in Seattle. So there.
Really?
I got four at once, man. And the Lindsborg shows are up through the middle of October. Same thing with the Burke show, but the Oregon Coast Aquarium show is up until April of 2022. So.
Well, all those links will be on our webpage here at paleonerds.com.
Yeah, man, check them out. But anyways, this interview was recorded as we were installing the exhibit, and Kent very kindly loaned a lot of his fossils to the Oregon Coast Aquarium exhibit, which is very cool.
Well, let's get this going and enjoy Kent Gibson, Ray Troll, and some other surprise guests.
Sitting here with Kent Gibson and Lucy, and we're chilling, and we're about to go in and see some fossils in a little bit. But Kent, tell me, how did this whole fossil thing start for you, man?
Well, it was back in 1997 when I was hunting agates and jaspers down the beach. I had my black lab with me.
No fossils whatsoever. You just hunted for agates.
Agates.
Yeah.
And I go down there and I got about a half a 5 gallon bucket full of agates and jaspers and I'm ready to leave. So I'm just about to hit my trail and look down and see this little baseball-sized rock. It had some black stuff on it. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I picked it up and looked at it, and I threw it about 15, 20 feet down the beach, and my dog, who was a rock hound, went and retrieved
Literally
it.
Literally a rock hound.
Yeah, he would fetch rocks down into, I'd throw them in the water. He'd go down 2 or 3 feet in the water and bring back that rock. So anyway, before I got off onto the trail, he brought that rock back, so I threw it about 20 feet or 30 feet down the beach, and I took off up the trail and was putting my bucket of agates in the back of my truck, and Bart runs up and drops this rock right on my foot. And so I said, okay, Bart, you can keep your rock. And I threw it in the back of my pickup, and I loaded him up, and off we went. And I got home, and I reached in for my bucket of rocks, and I looked down there at that one that I threw in there for him, and it looked like it was staring at me, and it turned out...
Really?
Yeah. I saw the nasal. It turned out to be a little tiny porpoise skull.
Huh. Wow.
And very first fossil I found, and that was actually one of the ones that ended up at the Smithsonian.
Oh, really? It was that...
Yeah.
The little porpoise.
That little
Fido,
porpoise.
We call it Fido.
Yeah. Fido? Oh, you call it Fido, and you found it on porpoise. Ah! it was a porpoise. But that was 97?
97, yeah. During when we had all those big rain, and it was
the floods of 96, 97.
Yeah, it was really a horrible winter that year. There was a lot of rain and stuff. And
so a lot of turbulent stuff. But
yeah, I washed all the sand off the beaches. I was down by Ona Beach, south of Newport.
So here it is, 2021, and so this is, let's do the math. Well, we know it's 21 years.
24 years.
24 years, thank you, Lucy. So 24 years. How many rocks you got in that garage over there?
Oh my God. In the garage or that one?
Well, both.
I don't know. If you want to count them, go feel free.
But wait, there's the boneyard.
I took the boneyard.
And then there's the woodshed boneyard, which is that room that we just built last year or year before.
Year before last. So this year so far, I've taken 600 bones out of the back of my pickup.
What? This year alone?
This year alone. And I got 600 plus whatever's in the back of my truck right now, plus a few scattered around that ended up in the house big ones.
And then there's buckets on the back porch, and then there's buckets out in the barn.
So you got a fossil problem.
I do. I've just
we've been talking, the family and I have been talking about having an intervention.
Yeah, all right, so this rock is looking back at you. I'm just wondering about when did you realize that was a fossil? I mean, the dog brought you this weird rock. What was the next step in realizing that was something?
Well, since I knew it was something, I ended up taking it, I think, down to the Marine Science Center and had somebody down there look at it, and they thought it was a small skull of some kind.
Was it Bill at that time?
I don't know.
So you took the Marine Science Center next to the Oregon Coast Aquarium.
Right.
I think it was Bill Henshemaker.
Yeah.
It's a fossil, and did that just, trigger something in you? Like, ooh.
I thought, well, that's kind of cool. So, hey, I'm going to look for more bone when I go egg hunt next time. So
you weren't a childhood paleo nut.
Well, you know, when I was in fourth grade, I did a report on dinosaurs. I got an A- on it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so that wasn't too bad, I guess.
So you were kind of into prehistoric stuff.
Yeah, but I didn't, that was third grade or fourth grade, and I don't...
Mrs. Plunkett's class.
Yes.
Well, now, I've been down that beach with you a few times, and you spot bone left and right, and how quickly did you get this skill?
Well, it took about 5 years before I really got a good eye for the bone, and then after I figured out what it was really like, then they started coming, and, I'd go down and find 10, 20 pieces a time, a lot of times.
10 or 20 pieces.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the fossils come to you, or?
They're just there. They're just laying out there. You know?
But I can't see them when I walk. You see them.
I don't know. It's just kind
He's
of
got
those,
the eye.
It's my superpower, I think. I don't know.
But what are you looking for?
I look for...
Give us a tip.
The brown in gray rocks. The stuff down here is... most of it that I hunt now is Astoria Formation, so it's a gray rock. And you can spot the brown and the sometimes whitish inside marrow in there in the bones. And even if it looks like a little tiny piece like the one I found today... It looked no bigger than a nickel under the water a little bit. And so I brushed it off because I thought maybe it was just some seaweed or something on it. The top of it was under 6 inches of water. So when I brushed it off and I saw, oh, no, that's not seaweed. That's a bone. So I tried pulling it out and it was stuck in there pretty good. So I had to pull out a few rocks around it.
Really that brown against the gray, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of basalt down there, too.
There's a beauty of a rock.
Yeah.
Is this a skull right there?
Yeah, that's a little skull.
Wow. Check out, it's a tiny skull.
Mm-hmm. This one, too. It's all squished.
Is this a baby?
I don't know. I think this is probably a fish skull we're looking at there.
But that one's got the brown.
Yeah. But.
And the cell structure.
But you can see the cell structure in them is pretty prevalent to me. You'll see the sharp, on the skulls especially, you see on these kind of fish skulls, you see sharp little angles and
just a fish
little
skull
bones.
Here.
I think so.
Is that a
mammal? Yeah, this is a mammal.
So we're looking at a rock that's maybe 2 or 3 inches across. 3 inches one way, 2 inches another way. But there's two little eyeballs looking at me.
Those are not eyeballs.
That's not an eyeball?
No, those are the nasal passage.
Oh.
The nose.
Ah. Huh. Wow. That will be on the court recording. That's the rock being put down.
So, yeah, that rock I found today, when I finally got it dislodged and pulled it out, there was bones all through it. So, just a little tiny speck that looked like the size of a nickel turned out to be, a 50 or 60-pound rock with bones all through it, maybe baleen neck vertebrae, possibly. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell.
So... when Kirk and I came along in 2010, where you're 12 years into your obsession, and by now you've, how did you hear about us being in the area? What was up?
Well,
Lucy's here with us. Lucy is waving her hand.
No, it's not completely all your fault. I knew there was a couple of guys coming to talk about fossils. I saw it somewhere. About a month before, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then Lucy piped up one day and said, hey, there's going to be
talking
about fossils. And I said, oh, huh. Wonder if they want to see some fossils. So I loaded up a dozen skulls or so. And
I thought like you were like big fans of Ray Troll or
I had no clue who you were.
I was.
Oh, man.
I was.
You weren't, Kirk. I didn't know who
you were. I thought like you were just another fan.
No. I was the big Ray Troll fan.
All right, so you knew my stuff.
I knew your stuff because I used to work.
Misconception all these years.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. At a shop here in town.
I didn't mean to deflate your ego, Amy.
Well, you just did.
No, once he found out, I'm like, no, that's Ray Troll, the artist Ray Troll. He's like,
she's like, well, what?
And I said, you should.
But you'd even fished in Alaska, so I thought you knew my stuff.
Well, I probably saw your shirts, but I didn't know. I just didn't know.
Well, okay.
Sorry.
Oh, wow. So, romance's first fight.
Bromance is over.
Yeah.
I thought you were in love with me, man.
Yeah, so when I got up there, I just, you know.
So you came to our talk, and then after the talk,
happened?
Before or after the talk?
Well, before, I got up there 45 minutes early, and I saw.
It was early.
Those are two nerdy guys. They're not going to know where they're going to be talking about fossils. So I said, hey, you guys know where they're going to be talking about fossils?
And we said, we're the guys talking about the fossils.
And he said, I can't remember. He says, yeah, we're going to be right over here. I said, well, I brought some fossils. Do you want to look at them? Maybe when we're done.
Oh, this
kind of blew me off a little bit.
That was probably Kirk. He was mean to you.
Yeah, probably Kirk. Okay, he's not here. It was Kirk. So, anyway, I sat around and listened to the talk, and that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that, actually.
Well,
about these guys.
And then when it got done, I was going, God, there's 30 guys around him.
There were.
Yeah, who is this guy? You know, so I waited till the last guy got done, and you know, it was like another 45 minutes before you were done with everybody, and then I said, "Well, you guys still want to look at some fossils?" Yeah. We got Coast Guard coming by.
Sasquatch, probably.
No, that's not Sasquatch. He makes bigger footprints.
Nope. Noises. That's our evening flight of the Coast Guard. Thank you guys for your service.
But anyway, they came out. You guys came out and
opened the back door.
Opened the back door of the truck. Although you guys said it was in the bed. It was in the back seat of my truck because that's where I put
Well, you had other rocks in the bed of the truck.
Yes, I did.
All right.
But anyway, opened the door and all I heard from Kirk is, oh my God, Ray, look at this.
I didn't know what I was looking at, but then when we looked at it, did you know what that rock was?
I knew it was a billfish. I didn't know what kind, but it was shortly after that. I think I was messaging with Dr. Harry Feierstein from University of California, Berkeley, or somewhere down there, and he said it was most likely a marlin skull.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful marlin skull.
He was a bony fish expert.
And that marlin skull is in the Smithsonian now because it wasn't too long. Well, actually, Kirk became the director in 2012, the end of 2012. And so he had this encounter with you. And yeah, so now those are with him. Did we see the Desmos skull that night?
Not the first time, no.
Here?
Did you already have that? No, I found it between the first and the second time you guys came over here.
So it was
right before your second time you came to Lincoln City
to talk
about the
when we came back
first book.
And then there was all the excitement of there's a Desmo.
Well, you didn't know because when they came they didn't know because I hadn't prepped it at all.
Yeah.
And you guys were looking at it thinking, well, it's a seal, but it could be a Desmo stylus. So when you guys said that, I decided, well, maybe
I
should
try. Teeth were exposed.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I decided I'd prep that to see if
That's when
there was anything.
That's when he decided he was going to start buying tools, air tools.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Thanks, Ray.
Sorry. Yeah, well, I understand Jesse gave you a.
Jesse gave me a really nice one. In fact, I was working on that whale over there a little while ago. And
now you have whale skulls in the yard.
Yeah, a few of them. A couple of them right over there, easy.
He's going to fall over them sooner or later. I know it.
Well.
But yeah, I got to working on that, prepping that thing out there, and all of a sudden I found a little round white tooth in there, and I was going, oh my God, it is a desmostylus.
And the joy. It's actually a juvenile desmostylus,
yes.
I think, is the genus that it's been identified as. And you did the right thing, and you gave it to science. So do you get, the collecting rules here along the coast are, you're aware of them, obviously. These are vertebrate fossils you're picking up. Do you get pushback or concern from people about what you're doing? Difficult question here.
No, not normally. I mean, there's only been one instance where somebody gave me a little bit of crap, but I already had a kind of a permit from the state geologist to that says if I had, I could.
Bill Orr at the university.
Yeah.
So you knew early on that if you were finding stuff that it would, if it was important, it needed to go to an institution, right?
Right, and
or work with the scientists.
And if I didn't collect all this stuff, then it's just going to get ground up in the ocean and ground up in the dust. Like, I don't have any complete skulls because they get ground up in the.
And you don't sell these.
No.
Oh, never.
Never.
No, I had an offer for $5,000 for that Marlin skull like the first week had it, but I told him no.
Well,
it's illegal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yes, selling him is another thing. But actually what you've been doing, Kent, is something that's been playing out even today, is last night there was a science-y nerd that came over. He's not a paleontologist, but he's got a passion. He looked at this one rock, thought it looked really different, and this morning you posted it on Facebook, right? And then within moments, so you're actually using social media to actually identify your fossils, and now you have experts from all over the world that chime in. And so tell us the drama of that rock today.
Well, the guy showed up yesterday to look at it. It's been sitting out there for a few months, and I'm thinking, man, this really looks weird.
We're going to get to see
it. It's in the cabinet, in the blast cabinet. I was looking at it under a microscope. But anyway, I thought maybe it was turtle because it just looked odd. And I hadn't seen a lot of turtle stuff before, and it just looked weird. So I thought maybe it was turtle. And he came over and said, well, he didn't really know what it was
this
either.
This Greg Carr looked at it.
Yeah. And
you suspected turtle.
I suspected turtle, but he thought it was.
I suspected turtle.
I took a picture of it and posted it on Facebook last night, and I'm getting all sorts of stuff back that it may be a bird skull.
A big
skull. I'm looking at the rock right now. Why does it look so different?
Well, this you see on the bony part here is not like marine mammal at all. I mean, it's just completely different than any marine mammal bone.
So the bone structure looks different.
It's different completely.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's much kind of broader. Yeah. It's not as fine.
Be careful. Right? This stuff, I haven't got any glue in it yet. That thing, I'm going to have to put some.
It could pop out.
Yeah, I just want to be real careful with it until.
Just kidding, listeners. I'm editing this and just had to do that.
So you have some of the world's experts. The top experts in the world chiming in.
Yeah.
And within.
By a click.
By a click, and they're all. So it went from possible shark skull to. Do most of them now think bird?
Yeah, they think it's bird skull, which is.
But what's the bird they think it is?
I think there's been like two.
It was Pelagornis for a little bit. But then it's the other one. But it's a Miocene. So these rocks are about 23 million years old.
Well, they're somewhere between 15 and 21 million years old.
That's a range. But that's a cool thing that you're using social media to do science. And then if this is an important rock, we'll just sell it on eBay for a lot of money. No, we won't do that.
No.
Give me $10 for it. No.
Well, I'm prepared to offer you right now T-shirts.
Really? No.
So to Paleo Bar.
I don't want any of your dang T-shirts.
You've got enough of my damn T-shirts.
Yeah, we can
well,
barter
I don't,
it.
But I,
there we go.
I got a few.
So this may be the roof, the skull roof of a gigantic bird with a 26-foot wingspan.
Yeah, that's what
It's like a toothy pelican bird.
Mean. I would not want to meet him face to face.
So you've already Googled an image up? And actually, you know, I painted a bird like this in the cover of the Cruising the Fossil Coastline. There might be more of this skull.
There might be a little more in the back of it there, yeah, if it got
if
prepped
the
out.
Top of the, you don't want to screw this thing up, dude, if this is... So you might want to get this to somebody who can really prepare it properly. Not
one,
that you don't do a proper job, but you don't want to screw it up.
Well, I'd rather have that one go to somebody...
Who knew what they're doing.
Who really
well,
knew.
Well, not that you don't know what you're doing, but...
You know enough to just say, not me yet.
Yeah.
Plus, how many hours does it take to drill down through this stuff?
Oh, depends on which scribes you use. It wouldn't take long with that big one, but I don't want to use that big one on there especially.
No, that needs a delicate hand.
You know, maybe they want to do it in acid. They maybe want to acid prep it instead. That may be... a better way to do it. Just take more time and do it with acid.
I wish I owned stock in white vinegar.
It's just vinegar, right, for a bit?
Well, acetic acid, but you know, they have different grades of it, and usually I think the institutions use a little higher grade than what's in the vinegar, white vinegar.
So do you ever listen to a podcast called Paleo Nerds?
I'm up to somewhere around episode 21, I think.
We have the social media manager for Paleo Nerds right here.
Oh, yeah?
Nice.
Yeah.
Good segue.
Just toss the ball over to you, my daughter. Held a bird skull from 20 million years ago of a giant bird.
I mean, that's pretty wild. So you're saying like regularly you go out in the mornings and you're finding like 10 things a day, like on average? Is that?
Well, there's better times of the year. I take the summer off normally because the sand washes in and covers everything up. But then when we get the stormy weather starting sometimes in November and December, then starts washing the sand off the beach, and then I'll go down and hit it pretty hard whenever I can. And
I basically don't see him for much for 5 months, November through March.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
End of March, yeah.
What?
Because
so it's morning and
it's whenever the tides
whenever
are.
It's his
morning
life,
or evening.
He is a mermaid. His life revolves around the tide.
Yeah. Tide waits for no man.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, he's got to be there.
This morning it was...
And so I'm from Southern California, where on the beaches there, people are really territorial about, like, surfing spots. Is it like that for, like, fossil hunting spots here in the Oregon coast? Because it's a little too cold to want to surf here all the time, but I feel the fossils are
not so much, but, you know, I went down to...
it's a little uncomfortable when the other people start snooping around and in your territory.
It bugs me a little bit, yeah.
But, you know, let's explore this.
I can't do this forever.
Well, what are you going to do with all these rocks, Lucy?
I've got a long list, you know, because, you know, if he goes before I do, it's like, okay, which museum wants this stuff? Mm-hmm.
Or who's going to be confused in 20,000 years, you know?
Yeah, what are all these fossils doing here?
My rock garden is overflowing, and, you know, are we going to expand? I don't know.
We already did. We expanded over there.
We did. And there.
Because it used to be, when you guys were here, that was a garage. And then since then, I closed it in and put the double doors. And
so that's a museum now.
Well, yeah. There's not nearly as much in there as there used to be.
Well, have you labeled stuff? Do you have tours? Do people come?